Yo, me and Tucker dominated the beer pong table the whole night, son. We freaking dominated,
bro. Bro, I got a job in the law firm of my dad's frat brother.
Dude, you know that hot girl at the gym? I was kidding her, pretending she had BO. She was freaking laughing, bro.
I still give mad props to Jonathan Papelbon, bro. That dude is awesome.
Yeah, I went to Simsbury High. It was tough, bro, because a lot of kids were super jealous of my dad's Lamborghini blasting some Oasis. Today is gonna be the day that they're gonna throw it back to you. Hey, bro, is it true it's not healthy to sleep past noon?
Clown question, bro.
Hey, bro, check out this Greg Ostertag throwback jersey I freaking scored on eBay.
These are the voices of Bro America, a generation of young American men trapped in a world of popped collars, backward baseball hats, stupid drinking games, and jockey friendships. Tragically, none of them seem to understand that they have become bags. Today on the show, we go behind the popped collar to look at the deep inner loneliness of the American bro. And now, he totally woke up this morning on Ryan Lochte's bathroom floor after shotgunning Pepto-Bismol. Colin McEnroe.
I may be too old to be a bro. All right, so we are going behind the popped collar today. And I know what you're thinking out there. I know what you're thinking, listeners. You're thinking, there are important things going on in the world today. And what are they talking about? They're talking about bro culture. Well, let me just tell you, first of all, to understand bro culture is to understand, I think, a moment right now. And it is perhaps to understand a whole bunch of kind of underlying currents that yeah, I think I could sort of defend the show on serious pretexts. There's a lot of ways that we can sort of understand the moment we're in if we understood bros a little bit better. Who knows what the Supreme Court does after they issue these verdicts? They may put backwards baseball caps on and pop their collars and get out of their robes. So we're going to talk about the idea of the bro. And let me tell you a little bit about who's going to be joining us as we go along here. In a few minutes, you'll meet Ashira Tarrant. She's the author of Men and Feminism and Men Speak Out, Views on Gender, Sex, and Power. She's an associate professor at Cal State University. You'll also meet Alex DeLuca. He's founder of Gay Bros, which is a Reddit-based community for guys with traditionally manly interests like sports, hunting, and beer, but they are gay. I'm perhaps the word "but" shouldn't even be in there. I don't know. Josh Dean is a deputy head of public relations for BronyCon 2013. I think if I tell you what BronyCon is or what bronies are, just a whole bunch of you are going to defect or something. So that'll have to wait. But we want to begin with the basic idea of the bro. There I think is a definable kind of tribalism that's noticeable. Rather than have me stumble my way through it, we're going to turn it over to somebody who's thought a lot more about it. Gene Demby is a writer for NPR's Code Switch blog. It was, in fact, his piece, his map, his Venn diagram of brodom that kind of got us rolling down this strange road we're on right now. So, Gene, I'm going to let you kind of unpack this for us a little bit. So for the people listening who at the moment have no idea what in the world it is that we're talking about, give us bro life or bro culture 101.
Well, thanks for having me, Colin. So bros are kind of fratty, younger guys who kind of very vehemently celebrate kind of traditional masculine ideals, right? And so there's an element, depending on who you ask, there's an element of kind of pejorative, there's a pejorative element to bro, that label. Some people very proudly wear the label, and some people, when they when they label someone a bro, they have a very, very negative implication that they're trying to get across.
What is it? What is the thing that is being reacted to at the core of it?
Well, the idea, I guess, is kind of a uncomplicated relationship with kind of traditional masculine performance, right? And so these are guys who love sports. And they don't have a problem with that. They love drinking, and they love, it's kind of a frattiness, but also refracted through maybe even like hip hop a little bit. So these are preppy guys who might enjoy a little bit of like social privilege, either male privilege or privilege of class or even white privilege. They also are kind of unperturbed by that, right, in a world in which I guess those things are coming under more scrutiny.
Yeah, it seems to me that one of the keys to this, one of the keys at least to the aesthetic, the bro aesthetic, is a white appropriation of certain black styles. You know, whether it's a backwards baseball hat or certain kinds of handshakes. I mean, there's like six of them I think you have to know or something. you know, that there's sort of this kind of sense that that they're making themselves cool by doing that. And of course, there's obviously a huge risk factor there, because what you wind up looking like is a bunch of white guys trying to do black things and seeming vaguely inauthentic.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, is that bros, and this is like kind of a larger conversation about hip hop culture's kind of dominance as a musical idiom and a cultural idiom. Bros, I think that the bros exist kind of as a separate idea from the idea of like black people or white people kind of appropriating yes. black slang. I think they almost exist in a world that assumes that everyone is listening to hip hop, and that there's nothing that hip hop, while still raced and still has this racial component to it, an incredibly important racial component to it, is just the kind of world that everyone plays in, that everyone under a certain age plays in. And so bros are, you know, they may go to Georgetown and they may drop their father Saab, but, you know, they still listen to Rick Ross.
Just in the Venn diagram, I think, has to be beheld to be appreciated, but it does include Tim Tebow, Will Smith's role in Independence Day. I'd say Will Smith and Harry Connick together in Independence Day are.
Yeah.
They are using brodom to defend the earth against invaders. Andy Samberg, Ryan Lochte is at that white hot epicenter of brodom, but we also see Channing Tatum and Matthew McConaughey. I do think Magic Mike is a movie which explores a certain part of brodom. I think it's and then there's sort of West Coast brodom that's kind of James Franco and maybe Andy Samberg to a certain degree. Army mm-hmm. Hammer emerging as a major bro icon. So these are all, you know, we use pop culture, I think, to try to understand something that's going on. To me, one of the iconic movies about what we're talking about in a way is this movie I Love You, Man, in which Paul Rudd right. is a guy who he's, all of his friends have been girls all of his life. He's about to get married to Rashida Jones, and mm-hmm. he realizes he doesn't have any guy friends. He doesn't even have a good candidate for a best man, except possibly his brother Andy Samberg, who is kind of a bro. He's like the coolest person his father knows, and he goes looking for this particular kind of companionship. And at least within that movie, it is represent. I mean, we're going to talk about some unhealthy sides of this, or potentially unhealthy sides of this as we go along. But within the reality of that movie, it is sort of suggested, you know, you ought to know some of these bro codes if you are going to be a man of a certain age and just function, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny you bring up Paul Rudd. It's very funny because, you know, when we were putting together the Venn diagram, there was a pretty heated back and forth because we're overthinking of this as to whether Rudd actually qualified as a bro, right? Because he's kind of self-aware and there's a little bit of archness to his kind of his general, his shtick, right? So if bros are kind of sincere in their, like, appreciation of like, you know, masculine in performance, right? Then maybe Rudd doesn't fit. Yes, like, so for a lot of people, you know, and the reason we use pop culture was because these people would be easily identifiable as kind of particular types. And, you know, there is so much that comes along with the way we kind of act as men that, you know, there are kind of unspoken rules about the things you do and don't do. And I don't think people actually ever really kind of unpack those things, right? The way men are allowed to kind of interact with each other and be, you know, sincere. And I think, you know, as I'm sure a million people who have studied gender studies will tell you, that, you know, men talk about other things, right, as like proxies for talking about like kind of what's happening in their persons, like in their heads.
Yeah, I mean, I think the suggestion, I mean, reading your coverage of this and then reading some of the coverage that went along with it and some of the people who wrote about what you wrote about your Venn diagram, Jen Demi, by the way, writer for NPR's Code Switch blog, is here with us right now. What struck me is this whole idea of bro culture is kind of about the need to codify certain kinds of male interactions, maybe because guys are so uncomfortable with improvising male interactions. There are so many things that could go wrong, I guess, for a certain class of guys. You know, if they got something wrong, if they said the wrong thing, if they lingered too long on another guy's fingers as they did some kind of handshake or something like that. There are like so many things that could possibly go wrong or be misunderstood that you just get it all pounded into stone so everybody knows what to say and how to talk. And so we all know we're guys and we like the same video games and we like Natty Light and we like certain things, right?
Right. I think, you know, it's funny like how much jockishness kind of jumped out as something that was kind of central. And that's why Ryan Lochte is in the middle of he's like the platonic ideal of brodom in our estimation, because he's both a jock and he's a guy who likes other guys. He hangs out with other guys and, you know, he plays a sport that's a little preppy. I mean, he kind of fits all these things. He has like a stoner affect, right? But it's, jockishness is important because, you know, sports is a space where dudes can get together and be, you know, close and, encourage each other in a way that, you know, is relatively, you know, subtext free. I mean, nothing is subtext free, but relatively subtext free.
I want to go back to that. And also, once we get Shira into the mix, I want to talk a little bit more about that and about also kind of, to me, it feels to me like bro culture also is kind of an extension of college, an extension of playtime, an extension of childhood.
Right.
And maybe we'll come back to that when Shira's here with us. But very quickly, I mean, one thing we sort of leapfrogged over, and since you now are kind of the go-to guy about this, one of the, for good or ill, I mean, to whatever extent this defines your career, it's not
I haven't
my
figured
conscience.
Out yet either. No.
But I mean, one of the things, we have like three pronunciations of this word, I mean, which around the newsroom we've all been kind of using more or less interchangeably. But I don't know to what degree there's an ethnology that really kind of goes along with bro, bra, and bruh. They all seem to be used.
So it's funny that bro, I mean, you've made the point about kind of the appropriation of like hip-hop lingo, right? Mm-hmm. Bro was definitely a term that black men used to identify with each other, right? And now it's become a race term in that when you say bro, when you say B-R-O, when you pronounce it bro, you were kind of almost, and this is the argument that we were making kind of, although there was, you know, dissension among our team, is that it is a race term, right? And bruh is, I guess, what bros might say to each other. But bruh is a different, bruh, B-R-U-H, I guess is how you would spell that, is a different thing. I mean, I think that that is still very much a term that black men will use to refer to each other. And in very particular, a very prominent African-American fraternity is known as the bros. I mean, that's not their name, but that's the kind of colloquial appellation applied to them. I think the pronunciation, kind of like a certain other word with a different pronunciation at the end, has a completely... A certain other race word with a different pronunciation at the end has a different kind of connotation depending on who's saying it to whom. And
yeah, so there's bro, bra, and bra is that just sort of like some middle ground where?
Yeah, I think it's just the way. I think bro is the way people who are describing bros from the outside are calling referring to them as. I think bra is the way bros refer to each other.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. all right. Well, you know, I mean, into the midst of all this, some of this is really, it's funny and it's, and I thought the whole topic was very funny. And then we started having meetings about it among our producers and it seemed even funnier, except that for a lot of the women in the room, I think one of our women producers said, aren't these just, and then she used a two-syllable word, the second syllable of which is bags.
Yep.
Isn't that just what we're talking about here? And so maybe now is the time to add to this conversation Shira Tarrant. She is the author of Men and Feminism and Men Speak Out, Men Speak Out, Views on Gender, Sex, and Power. She's an associate professor at Cal State University. Shira Tarrant, you've been listening to this conversation. I don't know exactly where you want to jump in, but maybe we could just start with that particular appellation ascribed to bros, a two-syllable word, the second syllable of which is bags. Is it more than that? I mean, you know, in a way, Gene and I have been talking about this whole idea of just men kind of looking for a social code that helps them socialize in a way they're not comfortable doing.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for having me on. And before I launch into that two-part word, and bags, I want to say that you know, most of us know a bro or we love a bro. Some of you are even bros. So I want to start off by saying that I do not hate bros, and that's where I'm coming from. I agree. Yeah, definitely, to use the fancy term, broness is a form of homosocial bonding, not homosexual, but homosocial. It's a way of guys being able to get together and like each other, but not like each other too much, because then someone might think that they were gay, you know, and so there's all this heteronormative rule enforcement that's involved in broness and the bro fests. I want to add to the East Coast vision of bros about like lacrosse and stuff like that. Speaking from LA, you know, it's part of the White Surfer scene too. So we can put that in the mix as well. And I'm really glad that we're talking about this because while it's funny and or just sort of like, you know, they get on my nerves, there are some really serious gender issues going on in this country, and they are related to masculinity issues. And I think talking about bros is kind of a fun way that we can get at some of these more serious issues.
Well, it strikes me, and I'd be interested in hearing from both of you on this, but we'll start with you, Shira Tarrant, that as we started talking about this, my reaction, I'm always the oldest person sitting in the room and therefore probably the most clueless person sitting in the room. But one of the things that I said is, as I read that bro culture, and I have a 23-year-old son, so that I think does put me a little bit closer, that one of the kind of things that I see happening is the exaltation of male friendships over other kinds of relationships. This is sometimes expressed most unattractively in the phrase bros before hoes. And you know, underlying that notion, there's a whole bunch of tropes and ideas that go along with that. But underlying that notion is we start out the evening as a pack of bros. Then we go off and we do whatever we're going to do. But really at the end of the evening, we're, you know, our primary allegiance is to one another. We'll find each other the next morning or the next afternoon to maybe talk about everything that happened last night. And that's almost more exciting to us than what actually happened last night, because really the sort of the prism through which we see ourselves refracted right now is the prism of this guy group. All right, you take it away.
Okay, so launching from that guy group focus, if I could bring it a little more serious, you know, after bros grow up a little bit, they join the military. They run for Congress. They become Fortune 500 CEOs. They form bands, you know, and that's still a big bro fest. So even if they're not wearing backward baseball caps, we still see across the country, despite the shifts in gender and the advances that women have made, there are still in the top positions of leadership, power, earning, and all of that, an overrepresentation of guys, specifically white guys. Those issues are really serious, you know, and I don't think that that's so different than what you're describing about, I mean, I'm not suggesting that the Supreme Court or Congress, you know, we're talking about bros before hoes, but there are links. We need to connect those dots.
I am to take the fun out of promise right there. Yeah, I don't think there's any guarantee that the Supreme Court, in private conferences, doesn't think or at least or talk that way. But you know, Gene Demby, you guys were having fun with this, but you're all smart enough to know that there is a feminist critique, or it's not even a feminist critique; it's a civilization critique that these guys. I mean, whether or not you believe the story about the Duke lacrosse team, one reason people were prepared to believe the story about the Duke lacrosse team was they kind of recognized a certain set of behaviors that were bro behaviors that very easily kind of moved out into much more aggressive territory. So, I you know, to what degree did you guys think about or discuss the dark side of bros?
I mean, we immediately were kind of fixated on the idea of on the way race was kind of informed or insinuated into the idea of broness, right? Because there are all these terms that we use like in our popular culture that are raced that we may not say white guys, white fratty guys, right? You might not say that in a conversation, but bro, when you say that, it implies this very specific thing. And obviously, none of those terms is neutral, right? I mean, they're not neutral terms. If you say those, people have kind of visceral responses to what that means and how they orient themselves to the people they perceive as, you know, embodying those ideas. And so, to your point about the Duke lacrosse team, for a lot of people, it was like, of course, those, you know, I mean, it was this. Those guys were a type. They were easily identifiable type. It's one of the things that we found fascinating. And when we were trying to kind of pick pop culture icons who fit this, you know, what was interesting was the people who lived or existed in spaces that might even have some real proximity to women in a meaningful way were automatically eliminated, right? So Hugh Jackman is a big action star, right? But he can't be considered a bro because he's also a musical star, right? He's soft shoes. And like, I mean, those things are deeply embedded into this term, right, which we kind of toss around casually. But they're like, as is true for so many things in American life, race and class and gender are so deeply kind of insinuated into them. And we wanted to kind of tease those things out.
Well, you know, obviously there is an element of privilege in some of bro culture, but I kind of wonder about the rest of bro culture. And you know, just to go back to this idea of kind of playtime being extended and, mm-hmm. and there's sort of a arrested development implication in all of that. But I wonder, I don't know. Taryn, I'll start with you on this one too. But you know, the bro is really in some ways not that new an idea. I was thinking about him today. I recognized him, and now I'm really dating myself, in the brother in Goodbye Columbus, who's been this gigantic athlete at Ohio State or someplace like that. And now he's just Ron Potemkin, and nobody really cares that much about him. And he's got all these kind of bro mannerisms that don't make any sense in terms of his entry into adult life. And, you know, I mean, we've seen the bro in other places. I think one of the real iconic or early sort of models of this was a guy named Tony on Seinfeld, where George Costanza, you know, just completely fell in love with him. He wore his baseball hat backwards. He did rock climbing. He used phrases like step off. But, you know, one of the sort of implied critiques of that for many decades was, well, okay, so that's your college behavior. You know, that's what was cool in college, and it probably got you pretty far socially and sexually in college to be that way. But now you're in the adult world, and that doesn't really make any sense. I'm wondering if the kind of thing that Gene Demby and the Code Switch writers are harping on right now, jumping on right now, is also a little bit of a product of the sort of post-2008 economy where, you know, I mean, you know, as you say, some bros will become, you know, Fortune 500 CEOs and be, you know, they won't wear their baseball hats backwards anymore, but they'll be jerks in certain ways. But I'm wondering also if you're looking at a bunch of guys whose adolescence is being extended because they can't even figure out how to make it stop.
Yeah, I think your point about the 2008 recession is a really important one, and it coincides with some real changes in female leadership and women, you know, continuing to push against that glass ceiling and all of that. And I think what's resulting is a huge amount of economic uncertainty. And so there aren't, it's not as routine as we once believed it was, you know, that men will do this and get a job like that. And there's a whole lot of questioning about, well, who am I going to be? What am I going to become? And, you know, and that's also coincided with a whole slew of movies, just to bring them more current, like Failure to Launch, 40-Year-Old Virgin, basically anything that Seth Rogen has done, you know, all these kid-alt themes where, you know, I'm not going to grow up, I'm just going to keep doing bong hits on the couch. And I do think that that's related to a lot of economic uncertainty and shifting in educational patterns and things like that that people are concerned about.
Yeah, I don't know. Gene, do you want to react to that?
Well, I mean, it's funny you brought up Magic Mike earlier, because that movie seemed to be specifically about kind of teasing out and the difficulties of kind of masculine performance and like what it means to be kind of a worker who uses his body in a very specific way. But in a way that, you know, the economy is changing in a way, in so many ways, in which kind of the things that we associated with male bodies, right? I mean, construction work, whatever, those things, or even, you know, kind of auto industry jobs. Those things have all gone away. And there's, I think, some real kind of anxieties over like what it means to be an adult man, right? I mean, women are outpacing men in college degrees and postgraduate degrees, right? I mean, I think the kind of traditional avenues to like adult masculinity, I mean, there are fewer templates, right? There are fewer templates for people to kind of aspire to or kind of model themselves around.
We're talking about bros and bro cultures and bros and bras and bros. Shira Tarrant, you know, we sort of danced around this, but I just want to get a little bit closer to it. One of the things, well, like Magic Mike also is a great example. One of the other things you see in Magic Mike is a bunch of guys bonding in a certain way and being able to relax with each other in a certain way. And you know, bro culture seems to be very much about relaxing with one another in a certain way and bonding in a certain way. Now, a lot of it seems kind of empty-headed to me, but it is a certain kind of bonding. And I think one of the prejudices we have, or maybe it's just a reality, is that women just do this better, that women know how to relax with one another and bond with one another and communicate in a not hyper-stylized way with one another better. So is this guy's just for sort of reaching for something they wish they had?
Well, first of all, I love Magic Mike. I had so much fun at that movie. And, you know, in Magic Mike and other pop culture movies like that where guys are relaxing into their broness and things like that, or they're drinking or they're into sports, the relaxing is not the problem. You know, the sports are not the problem. Hip-hop is not the problem. Where the problem comes in is where homosocial bonding relies on propping oneself up in masculinity by denigrating women. And that's where the problems come in. So I don't have any problem with guys relaxing. I love Magic Mike. And, you know, and I hope that maybe through movies like that, men start to have more avenues for hanging out together that maybe don't rely so heavily on denigrating or harming women. And we can even drop the ho part from the bros and hoes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that would
be good. I mean, so far, I haven't found that Magic Mike has really affected the way that I hang out with other guys.
No.
But who knows? You know, it's summertime. Anything could happen. Hey, let's take a really quick break here. We'll come back with more of this topic, more of both of these guests. We are also going to learn more about gay bros. That's coming up as well. And bronies, well, that's way to come.
Oh my God, what smells like tuna? I should have had my mom do laundry. This is my only hoodie. If I were a bro, I think I could understand why somehow it makes you cooler to walk around like elephants. Go to a party, but I stand in the door. Slamming brewhounds back with my...
And we're back. We're talking with Gene Demby, a writer for NPR's Code Switch blog, where he has mapped the bro genome, if you're interested in knowing what bros are made of. Definitely, you absolutely have to look at this blog post. If you do nothing else as a result of today's show, we'll also post some links to Jezebel.com, which is kind of a reaction to Gene's work. It's a bro approval matrix. But we're also kind of going beyond the pop culture part of this, too, and talking to Shira Tarrant. She's an author of Men and Feminism and Men Speak Out, Views on Gender, Sex, and Power. She's an associate professor at Cal State University. As we go along here, we're also going to add a few of your calls. Why don't we do that right now? Let's go to the phones. You can also text us, bro, at WNPR Colin. Not text us, tweet us. Tweet us at WNPR Colin. I'm getting all code switched up here. Here's Christopher from East Hampton. Hi, Christopher.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say, you touched on it a little bit before, but it seems like to me, I mean, I'm part of a bro culture where, like, I'm a bro sapien or a bromo sapien. And I was saying, like, I'm a very effeminate bro, and it seems that the bros that I know use bro culture almost to, like, co-op, like, girls' night out and to be able to do very feminine things without the stigmatism of being effeminate.
Well, you know, and just let me just follow up on that a little bit, because to me, based on my own really calcified and limited understanding of bro culture, effeminate bro almost seems like a contradiction in terms. That bro culture seems like so much an exaltation of a certain kind of preppy, jockey masculinity. I mean, how do you pull off, Christopher, being an effeminate bro? I mean, what does that add up to?
I mean, I love Hello Kitty. I wear Hello Kitty. I mean, I'm a farmer. I play sports. I hang out with the guys. We drink beer. And there's no, I mean, I don't know what, I don't see it as a contradiction necessarily. I mean, I see also a lot of preppy bros, are really concerned with their looks and stuff like that. That might be in the generation before might not have been so acceptable. And this brodom seems to be like a a way to connect with other guys on that kind of level, you know, talk about hair products or whatever, without, like, the code of brodom allows them to talk about these things without anyone, you know, making gay jokes, or maybe making gay jokes, but not them not being taken seriously.
All right, you're in a really interesting area right now, which in fact is going to bleed into our conversation, I think, about with Alex DeLuca about gay bros, and also a little bit into our conversation about brony. We've got to leave time for all that, but obviously, you know, a Hello Kitty loving farmer who drinks beer. I mean, what a cliche, you know. I mean, but Shira Tarrant, you know, just at the beginning of our conversation, you said we all know bros. We have bros in our lives. We love bros, you know, whether it's our bro is our actual brother or somebody we know. And you know, he doesn't sound to me like a bro exactly. But it's sort of, I guess, when you peel back the popped collar and the base backwards baseball cap and the, you know, habitual Grand Theft Auto playing and stuff like that. Underneath a bro, is there somebody like Chris or with a whole bunch of other sensitivities that you personally would find a lot more palatable?
Yeah, and first of all, I want to say I really like your caller, Christopher. I love that he's co-opting all the best from bro culture. You know, he's taking all the best parts of male friendship and expanding on that, and I would love to see more of that. And, you know, one of the things I keep thinking about are my students. I teach gender and sexuality courses. I teach radical politics. I teach feminist, explicitly feminist content, and I have bro students who come in, and they pose and they posture in certain ways, especially at the beginning of the semester, but some of my favorite students have turned out to be bros, because once I start scratching the surface, or once we're talking one-on-one privately where they don't have to front in front of their, you know, other people, there's really a lot of sweetness, there's a lot of concern, there are a lot of fears, or, you know, just the normal range of human things where they don't have to be performing that hyper-masculine bro-ness. So I love hearing that people are co-opting bro culture. And like you said, we're going to get into that with the bronies for sure. And I think that we need to see more of that.
All right. Let me just add to this conversation, because we're going, you know, I did an article for Men's Health quite a few years ago about what it meant to be a straight guy frequently mistaken for being a gay guy. And in that situation, you know, I interviewed a lot of guys who were sort of in that position. And in that position, what really turned out to be a consistent theme was that these straight guys just didn't have the straight guy markers. So, and probably the number one of those was an interest in sports. If you weren't interested in sports, but you knew a lot about, well, if you knew a lot about theater, you were absolutely, you know, going to head down that road. But if you knew a lot about something other than sports, the likelihood that people, and you were really interested in how you dressed, you know, and interested in fashion, you could be a straight guy mistaken for a gay guy very, very easily. The conclusion I came to ultimately was you should be really offended if nobody ever mistakes you for a gay guy. But Alex DeLuca, you're sort of playing against that, and I'm not really playing. You're sort of working against that. You know, Alex DeLuca is the founder of Gay Bros, a Reddit-based community for guys, gay guys, with traditionally manly interests like sports, hunting, and beer. You're sort of facing the opposite set of assumptions that some people have anyway, which is that gay guys are not interested in sports, hunting, and beer. Correct?
I think that's pretty much it. Basically, Gay Bros is a group of gay men who gather around these interests that society has deemed traditionally masculine that previously have sort of been closed off to the openly gay community. I actually founded the group a year and a half ago after a few negative experiences with some online communities based around those interests, where I was free to participate, but if I ever mentioned that my boyfriend at the time was the one who got me into shooting or sports or something of that nature, I would be accused of shoving my sexuality in their faces and all manner of other sort of comments. So I founded this group where gay guys could get together and talk about those interests without having to worry about tiptoeing around pronouns and things like that.
Who does the policing that you're kind of reacting against? And I guess what I'm asking is it the case that being a gay man with a lot of other gay friends who aren't watching the NBA playoffs, you know, who aren't interested in outdoor activities. I mean, I don't know. Do you encounter resistance from gay men who are saying, well, I mean, that's not us?
Sure. And, you know, I think some of that has to do with the fact that being gay has meant very different things and had very different implications for people born in the past 10 years, born in the past 20 years, 30, 40 years. It's, acceptance to the gay community is rapidly changing. So I think people who have experienced more bigotry and much more centralized sort of opposition to being gay from society in past years, they sort of had to find comfort in a very niche community and develop this sort of defined gay identity that allowed for survival and allowed for working together towards gay rights. And it was something that was very necessary. Now, as it's not quite as necessary and different sorts of groups can sort of emerge within the gay community, some people are uncomfortable that some of those groups have attributes that they typically sort of put together with those people who used to oppress them. And so I think the fact that we are celebrating these interests like sports and video games, some people have a immediate negative reaction because they attribute them to, well, those are the things that straight guys like. Those are the things that the straight guys who used to call us names like. And so there's just sort of an initial bad reaction before they get to know the group.
Well, I mean, and how wrong are they? Just in the sense that, I don't know, I don't play any video games, but my sense is that, you know, sexual activity in at least mainstream video games is always heterosexual sexual activity. I doubt there are any gay, you know, episodes in Grand Theft Auto. I'm happy to be proved wrong about that.
You know, that's changing.
Oh, really? Okay. So start me there. Okay.
Well, actually, I mean, I by no means am an expert, so I don't have an exhaustive list, but there was, I mean, Grand Theft Auto games like that, they're going to use sort of very exaggerated characters just by the nature of their game. But in a recent fantasy game, I think it was Dragon Age, they allowed for the user to choose for the protagonist to have a gay relationship. And it was treated just as seriously as the other options of the game. So these things are changing gradually, but it's a slow process.
Yeah. And then the other part of that is, I mean, in the world of sports, like Roy Hibbert was recently disciplined for, I think, using some of the typical language that athletes use. But, I mean, that oppressive language in which, you know, I mean, in which the word faggot is used as a general disparagement, that's still, to me, I think, a big part of sports culture. So when other gay guys say, well, why, you know, why have any interest in that? That still is a place where all of those really kind of weird and sick attitudes obtain. What's your answer to that?
Well, this is something that you might hear me say a lot, but I think this is something that you'll see is changing. And for my experience in particular, I think it has to do with the fact that I grew up in New England. And I was lucky enough to go to a small public high school up in Massachusetts, Georgetown High School, where the sports players were very accepting of gay students in the school. I was openly gay in high school. And I know that if someone called me a bad name in the hallway, I would have the quarterback of the football team or the star soccer player at my back telling them that wasn't cool. Now, I realize that that's a very unusual circumstance, but I see that more often as time goes on. And I think that's something that's sort of spreading from the more liberal areas of the country and is slowly becoming more normal, but it's certainly something that's changing and should change, but it's going to take a while.
Gene Demme, you've been listening to all this, and as you were working on your sort of your bro genome for the Code Switch blog at NPR, did you give much thought to the sort of whole gay-straight issue?
Yeah, we did. I mean, that was one of the first things we kind of wanted to tease out. I mean, gender performance is obviously a big part of broness. But, you know, I think it's really messy, right? And we talk about sports spaces. You know, Roy Hibbert got in trouble for his, I guess he said no homo, I think, after a comment during the Eastern Conference Finals. And there's this idea that sports is, like, uniquely or especially homophobic or anti-gay space to be in. But I always wonder about that. I don't know whether this is true or not, but, it seems akin to the conversations about unit cohesion in the military. Like, I imagine because sports teams are such, like, tight homosocial spaces, I wonder if people in 2013 would face the kind of ostracization that everyone assumes they might face. I'm not trying to diminish homophobia or anti-gay sentiment, but it seems like those spaces would be spaces that might actually be uniquely insulated from kind of the pressures of, or some of the stuff that's happening outside of the world. And, these are people who also live in the larger world, too. I mean, just because they're jockish people doesn't mean that they live outside of, the changing trends and, changing attitudes of the world.
All right. Well, we're going to take a little break here. There's so much stuff we've got to cover here, and we're going to run out of time. But we certainly need to have time for bronies as well. So let's grab a break. We'll gather our wits, what are left of mine, and we'll come back.
What are you bros doing? You're not supposed to set up beer pong in my studio. I have announcements to do. Today's show was produced by Patrick Scahill, Betsy Kaplan, Samaya Hernandez, and me, with help from our intern Jules Lefevre. The bro voices in the intro were Tucker, Jeff, Patrick, and Jules, which actually does sound like a bunch of bros. The part of Bill Curry was played by Placido Bromingo. And now, back to Colin. Can I get in on the next game, brah?
We're talking right now about bro culture. I just want to bring up one last thing with Alex DeLuca. There's so much that we could talk about. Alex DeLuca is the founder of Gay Bros, a Reddit-based community for guys with traditionally manly interests like sports, hunting, and beer. And if you're interested in that, that's where you find him. You find him over on Reddit. Alex, whenever we're talking about bro culture, I always feel like bro culture, whether it's gay or straight, it kind of exists on its own, but it also exists in a kind of apposition to everybody who isn't that. And I'm imagining a gay man who maybe went to a less accommodating high school than the one that you went to, and felt very excluded by, and also possibly even menaced by jock culture there, and has kind of had to thread his way through that in life. And now he hears about you, and he thinks, oh my God, here's another thing for me to be excluded from and menaced by, actual fellow gay guys who are embracing all of the things that freaked me out so much. What do you say to that guy?
I think one of the things that surprises people most about Gay Bros is how welcoming and accepting of a group it is. I think one of the things that we like to do with the Gay Bros community is really highlight the fact that we're gathering around interests. We're gathering around interests and activities that we like, and your mannerisms can be anything you want. You can define as masculine, feminine, whatever. If you want to go to a sports bar with us, you're more than welcome. We have a very diverse group of people, and I think it's sort of moving past sort of the character of what it means to be a bro and focusing more on the interests and the good parts of having a fraternal atmosphere and supporting your friends and having loyalty to your friends and really bringing each other all up and sort of getting together and just celebrating that friendship more than anything else. So I think we found lots of people who were hesitant at first because of those reasons and because of their past experiences. But once they just take a look into Gay Bros, they realize it's a really accepting and welcoming group.
Alex DeLuca, thanks so much for joining us. Once again, he's the founder of Gay Bros, a Reddit-based community for guys with traditionally manly interests like sports, hunting, and beer. There's a terrific essay about that in Slate, which I would give you the link for, but I don't know it. You can find it really easily. Whenever we kind of dig around in something like this, I mean, Gene Demby is the guy who kind of got us started with his blog at NPR's Code Switch. We learn about other things. This would be something that I didn't know anything about, but we started reading about it, and I came across the term brony. And I'm thinking, what is this, and it turns out that a brony may or may not have something to do. One of the nice things about the word bro is it's very portmanteau friendly. It combines very well into words like bromance. But so I thought, is that the same thing? What's going on with brony? So we decided we would find out a little more about this, and I hope Shira Tarrant is still there because I want to hear what she has to say about this. She said she was intrigued by it. But Josh Dean is deputy head of public relations for BronyCon 2013, which is like the Comic-Con of My Little Pony, if that helps you. And there's more info at BronyCon.org, of course. Josh Dean, for people who are hearing this word for the first time, what's a brony?
Hi. Yes, brony is kind of the portmanteau of the word bro and pony. It kind of came about amongst people who discovered the show My Little Pony Friendship is Magic way back when it started in 2010.
And so how would that play out? In other words, how would a combination of bro and pony, what would that mean? What would that add up to?
Ultimately, it's a very generic term for any fan, any person who is a fan of the show My Little Pony Friendship is Magic. While the connotation of, you know, bro and pony kind of gives the indication of it being all males, it's actually male and female.
And is the sort of subtitle of the series important here? Friendship is Magic. I mean, my sense of this show is that that each of the episodes is centered around some aspect of good friendship. So is this kind of exploring the whole issue of friendship and being friendship in a way that's maybe stripped of some of the kind of macho trappings that we've been talking about here on the show?
Yes. I mean, the show is very dedicated towards, towards teaching, you know, its key demographic of children what it means for good friendship and how to interact with people in general. That's the big reason why it's called, you know, Friendship is Magic.
Gotcha. Shira Tarrant, you've been listening to all this. You said earlier in the show you were really intrigued by brony culture. Give me your take on it.
Well, you know, I love that there are bronies, and I love that there are guy bronies, and I really think that bronies can challenge our assumptions about gender and about guyness. It shows us that guys can be lighthearted and sweethearts and, you know, enjoy friendships and pink little ponies. And it also is such a powerful example about the rules that keep men in that man box, because for people who haven't heard of bronies and they're hearing about grown men who like cartoon pink ponies who prance around talking about friendships, you know, their first assumption might be, what's wrong with those guys? Or, you know, are my children safe around them? And those kinds of stereotypes of manhood and masculinity are things that we really need to address, so that we can start thinking about our first go-to assumption being like, oh, that's a really good-natured guy, instead of like, oh, no, he might be dangerous and weird. And it's fun, you know, the bronies are fun. I'm glad that they're doing what they do.
Well, you know, in all fairness, we should say Ryan Lochte is the keynote speaker at BronyCon this year. So no question that the gulf has been bridged here. You know, I think we're running out of time here, Gene. I'm going to throw this back to you because she just used a really interesting word. And so final word on bro culture. You know, she used the term man box. And so that's my last question to you is, if bro culture is a man box, is it a man box that keeps the rest of the world out so that you can be bros? Or is it a man box that's ultimately confining you, the bro, and keeping you from exploring stuff like painting purple ponies?
It's probably a little bit of both, right? I mean, it's probably something that allows people to have these friendships that might eventually develop into things that have more layers. But it's also kind of, I'm trying to be telepath here with a hypothetical bro, but I imagine it also allows you to kind of to position yourself against the world or relationship with the world, not against.
All right. This is as good a place to stop as any. I really want to thank everybody. We had just great guests today. And Gene, obviously, thank you for being our guide through all this. And Shira Tarrant, so great. Shira Tarrant, author of Men and Feminism and Men Speak Out, Views on Gender, Sex, and Power, associate professor at Cal State University. We had Alex DeLuca, founder of Gay Bros on Reddit. Josh Dean is deputy head of public relations for BronyCon 2013. Probably not too late to buy your tickets.
I'm Kyone Wolf, Bro MG. I'm so bronly. Just got back from the grocery store where I got macaroni and cheese, spaghetti bros, and broritos. Just gonna eat it all by myself while I listen to Connecticut Public Radio.